Hello and welcome to another edition of Digital Flotsam. I'm P.W. Fenton.
Stranger than fiction.
You've seen them, heard them, read them. They're always some kind of story, some ridiculously unlikely story, that you're told is completely true. Most of the time you come away saying to yourself, yeah, sure. This is one of those stories. And I assure you, it is totally true. Every time I think about it, I feel amazed myself. It just doesn't seem possible. I can't even imagine making it up. Who'd believe it? In fact, that's what I think I'm going to call this episode. Who'd believe it? The year is 1958. I am in the fifth grade at Public School 11. I live in a low-income housing project called the Berry Homes. Probably the greatest place I lived in as a child, at least from my point of view. I knew nothing of the stigma associated with such places. My mom was a stay-at-home housewife. My dad was busy busting his hump working three jobs so we'd have enough money to live in a low-income housing project. We lived at 209 Jefferson Street in apartment 2B of an eight-story apartment building that was one of 16 eight-story apartment buildings that made up the Berry Homes. It is the end of June. School is out, and I have a whole summer stretched out in front of me. This would normally be the most fabulous time for a kid my age, except for one problem. My best buddy, Billy, has gone on some kind of a vacation trip with his family, and I have about 3 weeks to kill before I can hang out with him again. Since all I ever do is hang out with my friend Billy, I'm kind of lost. I've got no school and nothing to do but stay home and annoy my mother and my little sister. And after only a couple of days of that, my mother decided that was not going to work for her. So she said to me, "Why don't you go to the community center and see if you can find something to do there?" I had never heard of the community center. Mom said, "Oh yeah, you'll have a great time there. They've got all kinds of things to do, games, arts and crafts. You should check it out." "Well, where is this community center?" "Oh, it's right behind our building. It's in the basement. It's inside." So I decided to check it out. The community center turned out to be a pretty cool place. There were all kinds of people there, not just kids, and there was all kinds of things to do. There were art classes, all kinds of hobby classes. There were games like backgammon, chess, checkers, dominoes, knock hockey. There were big guys lifting weights. I was surprised, but I really liked it. I started hanging out there every day instead of annoying my mother and my little sister. One day, I played checkers with some kid I didn't know. I had never played checkers before, and this kid whooped me pretty well. I think I played it so badly that I bored the kid. So after only one game, he got up from the table and he ran off to do something else. I was just sitting there, kind of staring off at the space, when this old guy, sitting at one of the other game tables, says, "You look like you could use some help. If you want, I'll show you how easy that game is once you know how to play it." I looked hard at this guy. He was pretty old. Older than anybody I knew. Way older than my parents. His hair was all gray. He had about 2 days' worth of stubble that was all gray. He was pretty skinny, and his clothes looked old, like they didn't fit right. and I noticed his hands. He had sort of slender, bony hands, and his fingers were brownish yellow. And being a kid, I didn't hesitate to ask. He smiled, revealing teeth almost the same color. "It's from smoking," he said. Well, my parents smoked. I guess that in view of his age, the stains made sense. He seemed like a nice enough guy. I moved over to his table. And within an hour, he had me playing checkers like I knew what I was doing. I realized almost immediately that the reason I was being beaten so bad was that I really didn't know the rules very well. And by the end of the day, I was no longer a pushover. As I got up from the table to go home, I asked him, "You gonna be here tomorrow?" He smiled and said, "Yes." I said, "Okay, see you then." We played checkers every day that week. I got pretty good at it. I even won a couple of times. Maybe he let me. I'll never know. I actually looked forward to playing with this guy. The next Monday, I showed up at the community center bright and early, and he wasn't there. I played a few games of checkers with other people, including the kid who had whooped me so bad, and I won them all. But I was really disappointed that my new friend hadn't shown up. On Tuesday, I walked into the community center, and there he was. I asked him why he wasn't there the day before, and he said that he had to go to the doctor's. I was relieved to have him back. I mentioned that when I didn't see him anywhere, I wanted to ask if anyone had seen him, but I didn't even know his name. He told me his name was John. I told him my name. We shook hands and started yet another game of checkers. But the ice was clearly broken. We were moving on from strangers enjoying a game of checkers to friends. And as we played now, there was small talk. "So, how old are you?" 10. "So, where do you go to school?" "P.S. 11. "Where do you live?" "Right here in this building, around the other side." Being a kid, I didn't ask as many questions. I didn't care where he lived. I saw him every day at the community center. One day that second week, during a slow game, he asked me, "So what do you want to be when you grow up?" I told him about my current idea of a great profession. "I'm going to be a stuntman." "A stuntman, eh? Really? Well, you know what? I've been in the movies myself." Silently, I thought, "Really? You don't look like anyone I'd expect to see in the movies." Almost immediately, he says, "You don't believe me, do you?" I gave him a classic kid's shrug, which nowadays would be accompanied with the word, "Whatever." And the subject was dropped. We continued our checkers. Well, the next day I'm sitting there at the checkerboard all set up, waiting for John to show up, when he walks in and sits down with an envelope in his hand. He smiles and says, "I've got something for you." I immediately sat up straight. Any kid who hears those words instantly thinks, "Cool, something for me." He reached into the envelope and slid out onto the table several photographs, none of them bigger than about 4 inches by 6 inches, most about the size of a postcard. "You didn't believe me yesterday when I told you I was in the movies. Well, here I am." And he held out a picture and he pointed to a man on a horse. And then he pointed to another man on a horse and he said, "And who's this?" I knew immediately. There was only one movie cowboy that dressed like that. "That's Hopalong Cassidy." He flipped to another picture. "That's me there." It was a guy in a bedroom pointing a gun at another guy. not a Western. But I could see in this one, it really was him. All in all, there were around 5 or 6 pictures. There was one of him and some other people standing in front of a building that said Edison Company. And for one of the pictures he showed me, he explained that the stage he was on was out on the Jersey Shore and that they could rotate it on tracks so that it always pointed towards the sun. It was outside. I was amazed. He told me I could have the pictures to keep. I was ecstatic. I actually knew someone who had worked in the movies. That night, I excitedly showed the pictures to my parents at the dinner table. My mother took the pictures and said, "Who is this guy?" "I don't know, some guy named John," I said. "I play checkers with him at the community center." "John? You don't know this guy. Why did he give these to you?" He wanted to prove to me that he was in the movies." "Well, I don't want you seeing this guy anymore. You don't know anything about him. Where does he live?" "I don't know." "See what I mean? No. No more community center." "Oh, Mom. And I'm keeping these pictures." "Oh, Mom. You'll just lose them. And they might be valuable. I'll put them somewhere safe." I was crushed. I thought it was so cool. I thought they would think so, too. But my mother was very much against this guy. I ran to my room. I buried my face in the pillow. And I could hear my mother and father off in the distance. They sounded like they were arguing. Maybe my dad would change her mind. That happened sometimes when he thought she was being overprotective. Well, the next day, her mind didn't seem very changed at all, because when I told her I was going out to play, she shouted, "No community center!" Of course, that's directly where I went. I couldn't just never show up again. That wouldn't be right. I had to at least explain. My mother said, "I can't come here anymore." "How come?" John said. "Well, I don't know. When I showed them the pictures last night, she got all mad and said I didn't know anything about you and that I shouldn't hang out here anymore." He looked concerned. He said, "Well, maybe if I talk to your mother." The whole idea of that didn't sound good. She told me not to see him again. If he tried to talk to her, she'd know that I disobeyed. I don't think so, I said. "I can straighten this out and you won't get in trouble." "What's her name?" "Mary," I said.
"Mary what?"
"Mary Fenton," I said. He looked startled.
"Mary Fenton?" he said.
"Yeah." "What is her last name?" The question made no sense to me.
"Fenton, I just told you."
"No," he said, "I mean, what was her last name before she got married?" These were strange questions, but I answered. "Breen." He slumped back in his chair, just staring at me. "What's the matter?" I said, confused. After a long pause, he said, "I'm your grandfather."
"What?" I thought to myself.
My grandfather on my dad's side died when I was little. I never had a grandfather on my mother's side, just a grandmother. He looked at me and said, "I haven't seen her for a long time, but I think your mother is my daughter, and I'm her father, John Breen." It dawned on me at that moment that I had heard at some point that my mother's father was named John Breen, but I always figured he was dead. He said, "You've got to let me speak to your mother." I agreed to take him to her. Maybe when she realized who he was, she would change her mind. As we walked around the outside of the building, it reoccurred to me that she might actually be mad about me disobeying her orders
So I decided maybe it would be safer if I just called her to the window. So I stopped along the pathway on the side of our building and looked up at the second floor. Our kitchen window was open, so I called. Mommy! Ma! Out popped her head. I couldn't see any reaction on her face. I said, Ma, this is that guy, John. He wants to talk to you. She was silent. John looked up and said, Mary? Don't you recognize me? I know who you are. She didn't seem at all happy to see him. It's been a long time, he said weakly. And I have absolutely nothing to say to you, answered my mother. And if I see you anywhere around my kid, I'll call the cops and have you arrested. You have no business around here. With that, she ducked back in the window, closed it, and walked away. I looked up at him. He looked down at me and said, Take care, son. And then turned and walked up the path towards the street. Turned left and walked out of sight. I never saw him again. I never in my life learned any details beyond the fact that when my mother was still young, he apparently just abandoned the whole family. Left to do his own thing. Maybe to be with another woman. Maybe to pursue a career in the movies. I never learned those details. But here's something interesting about childhood memories. It took me telling this story today, so very many years removed from when it actually happened, for me to realize that my mother must have recognized her father in those pictures. And that was why she took them from me and forbade me to go back to the community center. It also explains why my father didn't try to change her mind. Incidentally, during the following school year, I stumbled upon where my mother had hidden those pictures. And without asking permission, I took them to school to show them off. Somebody stole them from my desk during lunch break, and I've never seen them again. But during a few weeks of summer vacation in 1958, I stumbled upon an old guy in a public community center who taught me how to play checkers, and to my surprise and his, turned out to be my grandfather. You just can't make something up like that. Who'd believe it? So there you have it, another edition of Digital Flotsam. Next time, I promise to have a funnier story. I'm going to take a back seat next time and leave most of the driving to a special guest, So for now, I'll end with the traditional words of Big Al telling us that
Peter holded the microphone.